out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 29th of May, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. And this is the second part of our series on lost white civilizations. Now, I think today's episode is going to be a particularly interesting one because we're going to be talking about China. And most people are unaware of the amount of evidence that there is for white people being in China. Of course, I went through in yesterday's episode how Europeans have actually had civilizations all over the world. It's just our last civilization that happens to be in Europe, so we are called Europeans. And why I prefer the term Aryan, because it's not actually linked to any particular geographic area. The fact we are called Europeans deceives most of us into thinking that we've only ever existed in Europe. But we haven't. We've also been in India, China, America, Egypt, and we're going to be looking at the Middle East tomorrow. But today we're going to be looking at China. And again, as the source text for this, we're going to use, for the first part anyway, we're going to use March of the Titans, The Complete History of the White Race by Arthur Kemp. And this particular bit is from Chapter 6, To the Ends of the Earth, Lost White Migrations. And this bit is entitled The Tocharians, Ancient Whites in China. The Tocharians comprised one of the most famous eastern migrations of Celtic peoples into the Far East, reaching the Taklamakan Desert, situated between Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tibet in China, around 1500 BC. Remarkably, this great migration was unknown until the 1977 AD discovery of 3,500-year-old graves of these people. As a result of the natural dryness of the environment, many of the corpses are almost perfectly preserved, with their reddish blonde hair, long noses, round eyes, and finely woven tartan clothing, usually associated with the Celts in Scotland, showing undeniably white racial traits. The Chinese civilization always contained stories of blue-eyed and blonde-haired leaders who were the originators of Buddhism and the first leaders and organizers of Chinese society. And we're going to be talking about more about that near the end of the podcast. These stories were always regarded as pure legend until the 1977 discovery of the graveyards of the Tocharians. The mummies are unequivocally Nordic racial types. The graveyards lie near the ruins of the great Tocharian cities, built along the famous Silk Route. It is beyond doubt that whites settled in China, and the Chinese legends of white influence on that civilization have a basis in fact. These people have become known by the language which they spoke, Tocharian. The civilization which they built consisted of great cities, temples, and centers of learning and art. They were also the builders and maintainers of the original Silk Road, the path for trade between the West and China. It was originally thought that the Chinese built the great cities along the Silk Road, but the discovery of the remains of the original people of this region shows that the impressive ruins, which still lie undisturbed along that road, are the remains of a great lost white civilization. The first white mummy in the region was discovered by accident in 1977 after shifting sands uncovered a female corpse whose body had been mutilated, presumably in some act of war. Excavation around her corpse uncovered a further 16 mummies, so perfectly preserved by the desert that traces of tears were found on the face of a mummified infant. Fully dressed bodies were found, wearing finely woven woolen textiles with Celtic patterns, leather shoes, and jewellery. The desert conditions proved so exceptional that even pieces of bread used as offerings were preserved intact alongside what is the world's oldest saddle. In one grave, excavators discovered a saddle cover and a pair of trousers with drawings of humans on one leg, with one face having blue eyes. By the early 1990s, over 1,000 Nordic corpses had been uncovered from the graveyards in the region called Wapu. But by 1998, the Chinese government had halted further archaeological expeditions to the area, quite likely for fear of exposing yet more ancient European faces to the world. The current inhabitants of the surrounding lands, who are obviously not pure Chinese, and who speak a form of Turkish rather than Chinese, have been agitating for independence for some time. The discovery of the white mummies has served to highlight their racial and ethnic differences from the Chinese, and the issue has become a political hot potato for that country's government. However, some of the mummies, which have already been uncovered, are still on display in a local museum, while others lie in storerooms, slowly deteriorating. Ancient white influence was not limited to the western parts of China. A genetic study published in the journal Molecular Biology and Evolution, titled Genetic Structure of a 2,500-year-old Human Population in China and Its Spatio-Temporal Changes, came to a remarkable conclusion. The Chinese and Japanese scientists who authored that report found that the city of Linzi, located in the far eastern seaboard province of Shandong, had over the past 2,500 years undergone massive changes, and that, even today, that, quote, population showed greater genetic similarity to present-day European populations than to present-day East Asian populations, close quote. The report continues, quote, the 2,000-year-old Linzi population had features that were intermediate between the present-day European 2,500-year-old Linzi populations and the present-day East Asian populations. These relationships suggest the occurrence of drastic spatio-temporal changes in the genetic structure of Chinese people during the past 2,500 years, close quote. This report proved conclusively that ancient Europeans had penetrated China right through to the Pacific Ocean. Some Chinese legends maintained that the first Chinese emperors who brought unity and civilization to China had fair hair or blue eyes. The new finds are forcing a re-examination of old Chinese books to describe historical or legendary figures of great height, with deep-set blue or green eyes, long noses, full beards, and red or blonde hair. Scholars had once scoffed at these references, but it now transpires that they were correct. One of these accounts can be found in the Song to the Great General Lu by the Chinese poet Li He, circa 790 to 816 AD, in his Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Quote, General Lu, the valiant-hearted, riding alone on scarlet hair, out of the gates of Qin, to weep at gold-grain mound by funeral trees, inscrutable that vaulted azure, arching over earth, this is the way the world wags in our nine provinces, gleaming ore from Scarlet Hill, hero of our time, green-eyed general, you know thy will of heaven. That's translated from Goddesses, Ghosts and Demons, the collected poems of Li He. Over time, these white people mixed with the neighbouring Mongoloid tribes and slowly vanished from history as a distinct group. The physical features of the people currently living in Western China clearly show part white and part Mongoloid traits, with blonde hair not being unknown. Thus it was that the white civilization of ancient China vanished through racial mixing, with only the crumbling ruins of their cities and their corpses remaining as silent witnesses. And now we will specifically look at the Tarim mummies from the Tarim Basin, which is where most of the evidence for the Tocharians actually comes from. And this bit comes from Wikipedia. This is what Wikipedia has to say about it, lest you think that the author, Arthur Kemp, is biased. The Tarim mummies are a series of mummies discovered in the Tarim Basin in present-day Xinjiang, China, which date from 1800 BCE to the first centuries BCE. The mummies, particularly the early ones, are frequently associated with the presence of the Indo-European Tocharian languages in the Tarim Basin, and Victor H. Mayer's team concluded that the mummies are Caucasoid, likely speakers of Indo-European languages, such as the Tocharians. Mayer claims that the earliest mummies in the Tarim Basin were exclusively Caucasoid or Europoid, with East Asian migrants not arriving in the eastern portions of the Tarim Basin until around 3,000 years ago, while the Uyghur peoples arrived around the year 842. So he's saying that white people were there for 1,000 years before the Mongoloid types arrived. Mayer has claimed that the new finds are also forcing a re-examination of old Chinese books that describe historical or legendary figures of great height with deep-set blue or green eyes, long noses, full beards, and red or blonde hair. Scholars have traditionally scoffed at these accounts, but it now seems that they may be accurate. The body and facial forms associated with Turks and Mongols began to appear in the Tarim cemeteries only in the first millennium BCE, 1500 years after the earliest Caucasoid remains are to be found. Due to the fear of fueling separatist currents, the Xinjiang Museum, regardless of dating, displays all their mummies, both Tarim Basin and Han Chinese, together. The earliest Tarim mummies found at Quarry Ghul and dated to 1800 BCE are of a Caucasian physical type whose closest affiliation is to the Bronze Age populations of southern Siberia, Kazakhstan, Central Asia, and the Lower Volga. And I'll point out there, it's not saying that these mummies are anything like today's Kazakhstanis or maybe even Siberians, because 3,000 years ago, the inhabitants of Kazakhstan and particularly the Caucasian mountains were Caucasian. They were white people. Central Asia was full of white people 3,000, 4,000 years ago. So that's why it's saying its closest affiliation is to the Bronze Age population of that area, not the today's population of that area. It's a common mistake that people make. They look at the genetic or ethnic makeup of a country today and just assume that it's always been the same thousands of years back. Continuing with the quotes, notable mummies are the tall red-haired Shashan man or the David, 1000 BCE, and his son, a small one-year-old baby with brown hair protruding from under a red and blue felt cap with two stones positioned over its eyes. The Hami mummy, 1400 to 800 BCE, a red-haired beauty found in Quetzalcoatl, and the witches of Subeshi, 4th or 3rd century BCE, who wore 2-foot-long black felt conical hats with a flat brim. Also found at Subeshi was a man with traces of a surgical operation on his abdomen. The incision is sewn up with sutures made of horsehair. So they're obviously capable of surgery. And I'll also say that the felt that they were using, that was far in advance of anything that the Mongoloids had. They were also capable of fermenting cheese, which is a chemical reaction. You have to put two chemical things together to make cheese, which shows that they were also, you know, quite advanced in biological science to be actually be able to do that. And of course, we are, you know, we can tolerate dairy products and these other races can't. Many of the mummies have been found in very good condition, owing to the dryness of the desert and the desiccation it produced in the corpses. The mummies share many typical Caucasian body features, elongated bodies, angular faces, recessed eyes, and many of them have their hair physically intact, ranging in colour from blonde to red to deep brown, and generally long, curly and braided. Their costumes, and especially textiles, may indicate a common origin with Indo-European Neolithic clothing techniques, or a common low-level textile technology. And this was a really important find, because normally when you find bodies, all the clothing has just disintegrated over the years. But what they actually found here was that they still had clothes. And the beauty of Lulan could be somebody walking around in Europe today, the clothing that they're wearing. It's incredible. And that just shows a level of technical skill that, again, that the other races just don't have. Sharshan Man wore a red twill tunic and tartan leggings. Textile expert Elizabeth Wayland Barber, who examined the tartan-style cloth, discusses similarities between it and fragments recovered from salt mines associated with the Hallstatt culture. As a result of the arid conditions and exceptional preservation, tattoos have even been identified on mummies from several sites around the Tarim Basin. And that's important that she says that it has similarities with the Hallstatt culture. Of course, that's in Europe. But they have no way to actually connect up the people in Europe with the people in China. This is the bit that they are missing, because they seem to have an inability to understand that white people did not just exist in Europe. We've been everywhere else as well. And I have a lot more evidence to actually show that as well. I'll just move on to the next load of quotes that I've found for us here. And this is to do with dolmens. Now, wherever white people have been, we find dolmens and standing stones and stone circles. We find them all around the world. We have them all over Britain. And they claim that in Britain they were built by the Mediterranean race, the smaller version of the Nordic. And it was in the Neolithic times, but not in the Bronze Age times. And the difference with the dolmens in Korea is that they were actually built in the Bronze Age times. And again, they have a lot of questions about these dolmens, which could be solved by looking at the evidence of the human remains that are left there. But I can't find any tests that have actually been done on the human remains. They do remark that they have found them, but they don't actually say what the results of them were, probably because they want to hide the results of them. These quotes that I've got here are taken from a few sites, and we'll start with Korea. Korea has a long history of human habitation, indicating settlement from the north. In fact, there is some disputes as to whether the first inhabitants were Proto-Caucasian and were only then followed by people of Mongoloid stock. Well, we've just seen in the last references to the mummies from the Tarim Basin that yes, they were Caucasian, and yes, they were there before the Mongoloids. And Korea is pretty much along the same line of latitude as the Tarim Basin. It's just a little bit further south. So these people were traveling on the Silk Route to China. They would have got as far as Korea and Japan, as we see from the evidence here. The president of the World Megalithic Association in Korea, Yu In Hak, claimed in 1999 that 25,000 dolmens still existed in Korea, as opposed to 80,000 dolmens and standing stones 30 years previously. Most have been destroyed by land development, construction, and ignorance. And the largest dolmen, Bugunri, in Korea, is 7.1 times 5.5 meters in size. I mean, that must be a huge capstone. Most of the dolmens are located in the northwestern and southwestern parts of the peninsula. Dolmens are also located in the western part, but in the smaller groups. Researchers believe that there could have been even more dolmens in Korea, but many of them were built near the seaside and destroyed during storms. Nowadays, the majority of them, which have survived intact, are located in Jeolla Province, which includes up to 20,000 of them. Most of the dolmens worldwide are dated to the Neolithic period, circa 4000 to 2000 BC. But in Korea, the dolmens are far younger, suggesting the migration of populations from Europe or North America to the Korean Peninsula. The new inhabitants could have brought the tradition of building the famous Neolithic tombs into Eastern Asia. This is one of the more rational explanations for the existence of Bronze Age dolmens in this part of the world. Researchers have noted similarities between the Neolithic culture of Europe and the Bronze Age culture in Korea. The analogies between religions, types of graves, and artifacts discovered in tombs suggest that maybe one day the researchers will discover the key that confirms that the Bronze Age people of Korea were linked to tribes from other regions. For example, Europe. Well, they were linked biologically. I mean, that is not in doubt when you look at these Caucasian mummies that were found in the Tarim Basin. Archaeological evidence illustrates that Bronze Age culture spread down into the Korean Peninsula from Manchuria, especially the Sungari and Leo River basins, mixing with the indigenous Neolithic population around 1500 BC, this new culture likely created a societal elite which was responsible for and was honoured by the erection of dolmen tombs. The presence on the Korean islands of Jeju and Kangwa and areas of Japan of similar dolmens suggests that the cultural wave did not stop at the Korean mainland but also crossed the relatively narrow straits to the Japanese islands. And of course, we do find traces of European DNA among the Japanese. One curiosity which historians and archaeologists have yet to solve is why the finds in the tombs vary, and those with more precious bronze goods are actually the least impressive dolmens. The significance of the size of the capstone has also been debated among scholars, and whether that signifies the status of the buried individual within. Exactly how the stones were erected is an additional source of disagreement. And another issue is the great similarity between Korean and European dolmens, for example, like the ones at Karnak and Loch Mariequerry in France, but without any evidence of contact between the two areas at the time of construction. And I would say they don't need to have evidence of contact. I mean, it's because it was white people doing this, and we naturally do it. Wherever we go, we build these structures. And where they're saying that it was the elite that were buried in these dolmens, well, they obviously had people, servants around them, which were the Mongoloid peoples. And over time, they must have interbred with these Mongoloid peoples, and that's why Japanese, Korean, Chinese, they all have traces of European DNA there. And there's no mention made of these dolmens in Arthur Kemp's book, but I think it's corroborating evidence for what he's already said with the Tarim mummies. I mean, this is the same people that were building these dolmens that were putting the bodies in the salt pits. Obviously, they didn't have rocks there that they could build dolmens, and they would just bury them in the salt, and their bodies remained intact because there wasn't any damp there to cause them to degrade. But I really would like to know what evidence there is of the remains in these dolmens, because human remains in these dolmens in Korea, because I can't find anything on them, which I think is very suspicious, because they do mention that they have found remains, but they don't mention who they were remains of. And the final bit of evidence I've got to add to all of this for white people being originally in China and starting the civilization there is about the blue-eyed Buddha, who also happened to be the first patriarch of China. Now, Bodhidharma was a Buddhist monk who lived during the 5th or 6th century, and he is traditionally credited as the transmitter of Chan Buddhism to China, and he is also regarded as its first Chinese patriarch. Now, a patriarch is the father of the nation. That was the ethnicity that started the nation. And Bodhidharma was this guy that started the nation of the Chinese. And as we will hear, he was white. According to Chinese legend, he also began the physical training of the monks of the Shaolin Monastery, the famous Shaolin monks, that led to the creation of Shaolin Kung Fu. And in Japan, he is known as Daruma. Little contemporary biographical information on Bodhidharma is extant, and subsequent accounts became layered with legend. According to the principal Chinese sources, Bodhidharma came from the Western regions, which refers to Central Asia, but may also include South Asia, and was either a Persian Central Asian or a South Indian, the third son of a great Indian king. Now note, when it says Persian, Central Asian, Persia was white back then. And when they're talking about South Indian, it doesn't mean that he was an Indian of today, because we have descriptions of this guy. Throughout Buddhist art, Bodhidharma is depicted as an ill-tempered, profusely bearded, wide-eyed, non-Chinese person. And he is referred to as the blue-eyed barbarian. Now, the fact he has a big bushy beard again shows that he's white. Bodhidharma, as the 28th patriarch of Buddhism, was a continuation of an uninterrupted line that extends all the way back to Gautama Buddha himself, which of course means that Gautama Buddha was white too. Now, we've got a recent book that's been written about Bodhidharma. Ali Aliabadi is the author, and he sets out to show that Bodhidharma, the founder of Asian martial arts and Zen Buddhism, was a Nordic European, who is described in the classical Chinese literature as a blue-eyed, red-bearded barbarian. And for the Chinese, barbarian did not necessarily mean uncultured, but simply not Chinese. Although Bodhidharma is now portrayed as a Mongoloid, earlier depictions of him clearly portray him as a Nordic. Propagators of Buddhism came from Western regions such as the Kushan Empire, with emissaries coming along the Silk Road. Bodhidharma went to the Shaolin Temple and established martial arts and Zen Buddhism there. This influenced all aspects of Chinese and then Japanese culture, from architecture and drama right down to the tea ceremony. Some contend that Bodhidharma did not exist. To these, Aliabadi replies, "In the final analysis, even if Bodhidharma was nothing more than a will-o'-the-wisp, a pious wish of Buddhists to justify themselves and give themselves airs, the fact remains that many peoples of the Orient, especially the Japanese, venerate this figure, a white man." Of course, the Bodhidharma didn't exist school has yet to explain why a white man should be venerated in the first place. So we've got three lots of proofs there. We've got DNA proof, we've got architectural proof, the way that the graves are built proof, and we've also got proof in the religious writings and the religious art that the original patriarch of China was white, and the original Buddha was white, and the people that were of a high standard of civilization were also white. And there wasn't a connection with Europe at the time when all this began. There wasn't a connection with Europe. So the only place they could have really come from is the Middle East, Mesopotamia, the Fertile Crescent, where the first civilizations came from. And that's what we're going to be looking at tomorrow. So thank you very much for listening. God bless and hail victory.